welcome to Throttle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. And it is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, all aboard the Throttle Up Express, powered by High Velocity Reason, and I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired. Now, I'm a naval aviator and former squadron commander and Top Gun instructor as a naval aviator. And also, I'm a pioneer in the field of some aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving, and of course, high velocity reason. Now, our tagline for the show is to accelerate beyond the ordinary. So we could say that we are not ordinary thinkers, you and I, but we are different and we are out of the box thinkers. Our motto for the show is to employ high velocity reason to achieve high octane performance. And in a nutshell, that basically means to stay out ahead of the problem. That's particularly important if we want to achieve success. Now, our mission statement for the show, and this changes a little bit from time to time, but this is a pretty good mission statement, is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, our website, the address here is throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. That's the address for the website. And before we close on our introduction, I wanted to say that our audio engineering services is provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, which is right outside of Denver on the west side. Highly recommend their services for anyone who wants to get involved with audio. It could be any kind of audio that you might have in mind, including music, by the way. Also, graphics artist services and media support is provided by Reflections Printing, and the gal is Jennifer. She heads up this organization, and she owns it as well. And Jennifer does a great job with all of our media support, is a fantastic graphics artist and media production specialist, and her phone number is 435-574-0422. That's 435-574-0422. And before we close the introduction, I want to say that the show is typically organized into three parts. So part one of Throttle Up is critical thinking, or an ongoing discussion of various aspects of critical thinking and complex problem solving. Part two is our storyboard, and the storyboard is a story of America, or a story of Americans, story of an individual. It could be any kind of story, but it all relates to trying to get our arms around this whole thing, which we call critical thinking and complex problem solving. And then part three is our radio essay. Now, our radio essay is typically a little bit more in-depth treatment of a particular subject. We do not intend for this to be boring. But for those who would like a little bit more info on certain things that we cover in part one and part two, then part three typically is a way for us to get a little bit further into a subject matter and understand it better. Okay, all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers and complex problem solvers are welcome with open arms. Okay, greetings once again to Throttle Up. I'm Captain Kevin Smith, of course, U.S. Navy retired, and your host for this radio show and podcast, by the way. We are also available on podcasts on iTunes and as well as our website. So you can find us, throttleupradio.com. That's throttleupradio.com. And we have the full gamut of podcasts that goes back, more than a year. I think it's been a year since we've cranked up that capability. So anyway, and that's kind of a good thing, because more and more we see that, in this world of mobile devices and on-demand access, podcasts are becoming increasingly important for folks like you and me, busy and active, physically active, and are fairly mobile. We move around a lot. I happen to be pretty mobile. I do a lot of outdoor activities, and so I'm always moving around, going to places and stuff like that. And as we continue to improve our radio show, we're going to be doing some on-location events, and we're trying to crank up that capability now as we speak, where we can visit certain places and do some shows that are what we would call on location, to bring you the actual situation or actual event or actual location, and deal with that. We have a couple of actual locations tentatively planned right now. One of them is to visit, or for me to revisit, the Midway, USS Midway Museum in San Diego. I've been there a number of times, and we're going to be doing a show from there sometime. I believe it's going to be sometime this spring. There's some technical issues we have to deal with and permission issues, but we should be able to do that. And also, we're planning an event, actual event, which we will also be video recording this event on the Intrepid Air and Space Museum in New York City. That should be rather interesting. And we are planning to do a radio as well as a video recording, and have that available in podcast format as well as video cast format, which, it should be fairly interesting. That happens to be the first aircraft carrier that I landed on as a student naval aviator. And also it has, I believe at last count, it has four airplanes on display that I actually flew. So, and we'll be talking about that. We're talking about carrier aviation and that particular aircraft carrier. What was it like to land on it? And also, what was it like to fly those four airplanes that are on display that I actually flew? All right. So what are we going to talk about this show? This show is primarily reserved for a discussion about President Trump's State of the Union address. And I was thinking about this fast news cycle and what's going on in this country, and it's kind of like every day there's a new major event, something else has gone viral. What is occupying the collective mind, if you will, what's going on? And, I thought, that's all well and good, but there are other things that probably ought to gain our attention. And, you know, if you're like me, and I think most of you are, you know, we share some common ground. We share some common mind space, if you will. And one of the things that I try to deal with is to not get too distracted with the, you know, the current viral event, but to look at things more critically and to try to understand things more deeply and to develop a thorough understanding of what's going on and what should we be focused on that is truly meaningful. And I think a lot of the stuff that's out there is not truly meaningful. It's more short-lived. It's more ethereal. It's not something that has enduring value. So what has, you know, and this, I guess this is a good question for all of us. What has enduring value for us as individuals, as Americans, as thinking people, as people who are engaged in something that is beneficial? And so I guess what I should be doing and is making a list of things and keeping an updated list of things that are meaningful, that have meaningful value to me as an individual, to my family, to I can say to us, me and my wife and our family and our community in our region, in our nation. What has meaningful value? Good question. All right. So we'll briefly talk a little bit more about critical thinking. I try to, except for the special, you know, the special broadcast that we do, special sessions of Throttle Up, and we cover those from time to time. We just finished a four-session series. Actually, it's probably going to be five sessions, but I wanted to delay that for a bit and talk about something that ought to be front and center in all of our minds, which is the State of the Union Address. But before we do that, I wanted to cover a little bit more about critical thinking, because all of this, you know, everything that I talk about has something to do with how we should think critically about things that are going on in our lives, about events, about situations, about occurrences, what have you. How should we do that? And this is the whole point of Throttle Up anyway. So to begin, I can say that what is a useful definition? Here we're going to go back and revisit this, because I think it's important to revisit some of these things from time to time. And we're going to revisit this, what I call a useful definition of critical thinking. What could we say about it at the very top level? What could we say about critical thinking at the level in which it is considered to be useful to us? What can it do for us? So let me read this. And this is, of course, comes from my book, Critical Thinking Essentials. The full title of it is Critical Thinking Essentials Quick Reference Handbook. Or you can just type in Critical Thinking Essentials in Amazon. It is, by the way, available again on Amazon. And that is, when I say again, it's been republished or published under or launched under a new publisher. And so we have this Critical Thinking Essentials book. And I think it is different than other books, and as you would expect it to be. All right, because I kind of like, you know, I'm kind of an out-of-the-box thinker in a lot of areas, and I was thinking about putting this together years and years, some years ago, and it occurred to me that, okay, people are busy. You and I are busy, but what would be useful to us? Do we just ignore it, or do we try to embrace critical thinking, but what is a good way for us to deal with it? And my conclusion was it had to be short and sweet. It had to be right to the point. Not a lot of flowery stuff and not a lot of long-winded explanations and long-winded paragraphs. There's a lot of books out there that are, I would say that they're good. Everything about critical thinking is good. Don't get me wrong. Anything that you can pick up that has the title critical thinking or thinking critically, or especially, and my favorite is higher order reasoning or critical reasoning or whatever. Anything that you pick up is useful. Don't get me wrong. To be able to think about how we think is extremely important for all of us, for you and me. But my takeaway from my experience, particularly in my book tour, my national book tour, which we are now starting to go into phase two of that shortly, and I'll let you know more about that over the next few months. We're cranking up some new ideas for phase two of our national book tour. And we may be coming to your town or your city. We typically, not exclusively, but we typically go to the big bookstores. But sometimes we will visit some of the smaller bookstores, some of the mom and pop operations, because it's the right thing to do, and we're supporting all of those who are out there in selling ideas in book form. It's actually it's an honor and a privilege for me to do that, to help all of those establishments. I recall some off the top of my head, some really enjoyable experiences I've had with dealing with some of these bookstores who were so delighted to have me there that it was really an honor for me to help them out in promoting their bookstore as well as promoting my books. One of them that comes to mind, and there's many of them, by the way, but I was just reviewing a list of stores that I've been to. One of them was the Barnes & Noble bookstore in Twin Falls, Idaho. That was such a delightful experience because the bookstore was so delighted to have me there, and it was such positive energy from all the people there working in that wonderful bookstore. It was really quite an enjoyable experience and memorable. Memorable experience for me, and my wife was there with me, and we often go to these book signing events together, and it was really quite a wonderful experience, and I was very, very grateful to be able to do that. So this book, The Handbook, is an important part of what I do, and I'm going to be reading here a useful definition about critical thinking. Critical thinking, in this book, I say, critical thinking is used to correct the most common and persistent problems associated with errors of judgment and choice. Evidence has shown that these errors are often committed by amateurs and experts alike. Importantly, critical thinking is a defined conceptual construct and set of cognitive performance aids, proven value that when activated, sharpens observations, clarifies the actual, improves problem solving, and optimizes success. Critical thinking is a skill that can be learned, lends itself to practice, and when used with intent, can achieve amazing results. A growing body of evidence profoundly suggests that critical thinking is now needed more than ever due to our diminishing ability as individuals and as a nation to solve problems effectively and efficiently. And if you are familiar with our show, we did a four series special productions of Throttle Up just very, very recently. And in those four special events dealt with critical thinking and business operations. And we were looking at the growing, or I could say the urgent need for all of us to get very serious now about critical thinking. We need to really get very, very serious about it, because the list of problems is growing that we have in this complex world. The world is becoming increasingly complex, increasingly so, in all across the socioeconomic spectrum. Everything is becoming more complicated and more complex. Now, they're not, they're technically, those two words are not technically the same. All right, so complicated and complex are not technically this mean the same thing. They mean something differently, although there are some features of complicated that go into the arena of complexity, but complexity actually exists in its own dimension and has its own properties, if you will, and is a subject of its own theory. And so we are, frankly, we're grateful for that, because that supports the whole idea of critical thinking even more so, because complex things require us to think critically. And that's a statement that I'm going to stick with. There's a few that I have come up with that I have put out there, but that's one of them, and that may very well be the top one. Complex things require one to think critically. Otherwise, we will very, very likely make mistakes, make things worse instead of better, and not achieve the desired success, or what I like to call not achieve mission success. All right, so that completes our quick discussion of critical thinking. Now we're going to press on to part two. In part two, the storyboard, we're going to be talking about President Trump's State of the Union address, which, of course, when I reviewed it again, it is really quite a remarkable document. And so we will spend some quality time on that. So stand by. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up. This is our storyboard, part two, our storyboard for this week. And I promised you all we would be talking about President Trump's recent State of the Union address, which I think most of us actually saw, many of us saw on the on the television. It was broadcast. And I did, and I was very impressed with it. But, you know, I thought we should probably spend a little bit more quality time on it and not just take the, you know, take the comments from the so-called commentary class. I know lots of people made lots of comments on it. But this is my take on it, and I look at it more, I guess you could say it's more critically, more thoroughly. Certainly, we need to consider some things a bit more thoroughly, because lots of ground was covered, and probably is good for us to do so. All right, so I'm going to dive right in here. Now, this is going to be, I'm going to read some of this stuff from the State of the Union address, which I have in front of me, and also going to be making comments about it and things that perhaps we should consider for, you know, for future reference, make some mental notes about it, try to remember certain things, and to try to organize are thinking in terms of what is important, what are the priorities that we need to consider as a people, as Americans, as a nation, and as one nation under God. Okay, so let me start off. So I'll dive right in here, and then as I make some comments about it, I'll let you know when I do so. Okay, so President Trump starts off by greeting the Speaker, the Vice President, members of Congress, the First Lady, and he says, "My fellow Americans." He says, "Less than 1 year has passed since I first stood at this podium in this majestic chamber. Every day since, we have gone forward with a clearer vision and a righteous mission, which is to make America great again for all Americans. Over the last year, we have made incredible progress and achieved extraordinary success. We have faced challenges we expected and others we could never have imagined. We have shared in the heights of victory and the pains of hardship. We endured floods and fires and storms, but through it all, we have seen the beauty of America's soul and the steel in America's spine. Each test has forged new American heroes to remind us who we are and to show us what we can be. We saw the volunteers of the Cajun Navy racing to the rescue with their fishing boats to save people in the aftermath of a devastating hurricane. We saw strangers shielding strangers from hail of gunfire on the Las Vegas Strip. We heard tales of Americans like Coast Guard Petty Officer Ashley Leppert, who was actually in the gallery. Ashley was aboard one of the first helicopters on the scene in Houston during the Hurricane Harvey. Through 18 hours of wind and rain, Ashley braved live power lines and deep water to help save more than 40 lives. Thank you, Ashley. Now, a little bit more about Petty Officer Ashley. I'd like to read this because it really is, it's quite remarkable what she was able to do as a member of our military. And called upon to do extraordinary things under extreme conditions, and she performed in such an amazing way. You know, it makes you proud of her, proud to be with her in spirit, and proud to be a fellow American. So I'm going to read this brief description of what she did. And it appears in a blog called the Coast Guard Compass, which is the official blog of the U.S. Coast Guard. It goes on to say that Hurricane Harvey was a Category 4 hurricane, making landfall on three separate occasions. Harvey discharged as much as 52 inches of rain throughout 28,000 square miles during a 5-day deluge. Petty Officer Second Class Ashley Leppert, an avionics electronic technician from Coast Guard Air Station New Orleans, was a critical part of the rescue effort, especially in the hours immediately following the initial impact of the storm. Like many air crews who responded to Hurricane Harvey, Petty Officer Leppert's performance was exceptional, said Lieutenant Commander Larry Santos, Engineering Officer, Air Station New Orleans. He goes on to say her positive and ambitious attitude was contagious and created strong cohesiveness. I lost my place here. There we go. Amongst the crew during demanding flying conditions, her ability to adapt to constant mission changes was instrumental in helping so many affected by the storm. Now, that's a key there. He made a key statement, at least in my mind, as a proponent of critical thinking in the creation of adaptive systems, adaptive people, her ability to adapt, you know, and that is really quite extraordinary. And that that's very, very special talent. All of us really ought to be able to do that. And we should, and I think we probably can. But to recognize that in others is also important, too. Her ability to adapt. And so that ought to be a question for all of us to have as we move forward in our lives. How is my ability to adapt? How can I adapt to rapidly changing conditions and to operate effectively in a high-risk environment? And it could be any environment, and the adaption could be anything, but adaptability is the key. That's one of the keys to mission success. I often talk about agile and adaptive. One of the keys to mission success is to be agile and be adaptive. All right, so let me get back to this. Petty Officer Leopard expertly guided the pilots through forests of tree lamps, flotillas of floating cars, and countless other unique obstacles so they could land safely in unusual places like highway overpasses and parking lots. During a rescue of four elderly people, Petty Officer Leopard helped break through a chain link fence that was preventing the survivors from getting to safety. Without hesitation, Petty Officer Leopard grabbed cable cutters and waded through 100 yards of chest high water full of debris to assist. She then helped the rescue swimmers carry the survivors to the aircraft. The aircrew from New Orleans then received a notification that a woman was in labor at an apartment complex on the opposite side of the city. Petty Officer Leopard again guided the pilots through unfamiliar areas of obstacles, extreme weather, and busy airspace. Once the aircrew arrived at the apartment complex, Petty Officer Leopard lowered rescue swimmers down between buildings, power lines, and trees. Rescue swimmers discovered the laboring mother and was in and out of consciousness, who was in and out of consciousness, and the delivery of the baby was imminent. Due to the critical situation, the aircrew needed to transport the mother, father, and nurse to a local hospital as quickly as possible. With that amount of people aboard the helicopter, the aircraft became too heavy to take off. Petty Officer Leopard helped the pilots lighten the helicopter by jettisoning a portion of fuel and unloading gear from the aircraft that would be recovered at a later time. Thanks to the aircrew's quick and clever actions, the family made it to the hospital safely in time to deliver the baby. Okay, so, you know, that points a picture of, again, of the greatness of this individual, the greatness of our military, and the greatness of America. So I wanted to point that out. I was so happy to see a lot of that as part of the State of the Union address. A lot of this recognition of the greatness of the individual American, and they truly are. Now, the address continues with a number of other examples, and I'll read a few here. We heard about Americans like firefighter David Dalberg. He was here. He is here with us, too. He was there in the hall. David faced down walls of flames to rescue almost 60 children trapped at a California summer camp threatened by wildfires. Also, to everyone still recovering in Texas Florida, Louisiana, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands, and California, and elsewhere. President Trump says that we are with you, we love you, and we will pull together as Americans. Some trials over the past year touched this chamber very personally. With us tonight is one of the toughest people ever to serve in the House, a guy who took a bullet, almost died, and was back to work 3.5 months later. The legend from Louisiana, Congressman Steve Scalise. Okay, so President Trump continues to acknowledge other people in his address, and rightly so. And it gives us a feeling of pride for this great country. Now, he also talks about since the election, we have created 2.4 million jobs, including 200,000 new jobs in manufacturing alone. After years of wage stagnation, we are finally seeing rising wages. Unemployment claims have hit a 45-year low. African American unemployment stands at the lowest rate ever recorded, and Hispanic American unemployment has reached the lowest levels in history. Small business confidence is at an all-time high. The stock market has smashed one record after another, gaining $8 trillion in value. That is great news for America's 401k participants, the retirement pension and college savings accounts. And just as I promised the American people from this podium 11 months ago, we enacted the biggest tax cut and reforms in American history. Our massive tax cuts provide tremendous relief for the middle class and small business. To lower tax rates for hardworking Americans, we nearly doubled the standard deductions for everyone. Now, he also talks about slashing business tax from 35% to 21%. And he brings to the forefront the some examples here of how it is. And touch the lives of specific people, and I think this is really a good thing to do, and I'd like to see more of it. But he talked here about and with him in the chamber is Steve Staub and Sandy Keplinger of Staub Manufacturing, a small business in Ohio. They have just finished the best year in their 20-year history. Because of tax reform, they are handing out raises, hiring an additional 14 people, and expanding into the building next door. One of their employees, Corey Adams, is also with us tonight. Corey is an all-American worker. He supported himself through high school, lost his job during the 2008 recession, but was later hired by Staub, the company, where he trained to become a welder. Like many hardworking Americans, Corey plans to invest his tax cut raise into his new home and his two daughters' education. Please join me in congratulating Corey. Okay, so the economic performance of America, I can say, has been under Trump extraordinary. And why it's not getting more coverage, I mean, who knows? It's a little bit disconcerting and even depressing that all of us are not celebrating this success of America, the success of great leadership. And everybody benefits, not just the privileged class. Now, he also talks about we celebrate our police, our military, and our amazing veterans. as heroes who deserve our total and unwavering support. Here tonight, this is of course a heart-wrenching thing. He says, here tonight is Preston Sharp, who is a 12-year-old boy from Redding, California, who noticed that veterans' graves were not marked with flags on Veterans Day. He decided to change that and started a movement that has now placed 40,000 flags at the graves of our great heroes. And he says to Preston, a job well done. Young patriots like Preston teach us all, he says, about our civic duty as Americans. Preston's reverence for those who have served our nation reminds us why we salute our flag, why we put our hands on our hearts for the Pledge of Allegiance, and why we proudly stand for the national anthem. And so I would second that emotion, and I would second that, and we need to recognize that, and as a retired veteran myself, I am delighted when people come up to me and express their gratitude and they thank me for my service. I'm delighted, not just for me, but that is good for all the veterans who have ever served this great country. And so I take that and I tell them I appreciate that always. But I do that in a sense that I am also recognizing or helping them or helping the recognition of other veterans that have served as well. And also those members or former members of the military who were killed in action or killed in the line of duty, we need to recognize them also, particularly on Memorial Day, but also not just Memorial Day, but throughout the year, where we acknowledge their sacrifice, the ultimate sacrifice in their efforts to protect this great nation. Okay, now he goes on to talk about some of the deregulation and stuff, and how that has improved the business climate. But here's another thing that I want to spend a little bit of time on. America, he says, has finally turned the page on decades of unfair trade deals that sacrificed our prosperity and shipped away our companies, our jobs, and our nation's wealth. The era of economic surrender with respect to trade is over. From now on, we expect trading relationships to be fair and to be reciprocal. We will work to fix bad trade deals and negotiate new ones. And we will protect American workers and American intellectual property rights through strong enforcement of our trade rules. As we rebuild our industries, it is also time to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. Now, it goes on to talk about the infrastructure initiatives, and I'm going to get to that in a second, but I'm going to spend a little bit of time on these trade deals. As a member of the military who traveled all over the world, and as a member of a major airline who flew after I retired, I joined a major airline and flew all over the world, I began to see back then when I was doing that, that there were some serious problems with the way we understood free trade. Very, very serious problems, because these trade deals were not mutually beneficial. They were not reciprocal. There was something amiss. There was something seriously flawed in our trade deals, because we were not exporting anywhere nearly as much as we were importing, and at the time, the explanation from both the Democrats and the Republicans elected officials, the explanation was that that was an inevitable part of the new reality, the new global reality, where other countries could produce viable products at a cheaper cost than America could, primarily because American workers were demanding too much money. And that was a persistent explanation. It was a persistent attitude that I experienced for time and time again for many, many years. And as it turns out, it was a fatally flawed explanation. It was seriously wrong. And unfortunately, it was seriously wrong, intentionally so. It was designed to be deceptive. And shame on all those people who perpetrated that fallacy. But the fact remains is they did. And the fact remains that a lot of us weren't skeptical enough. I'm not saying all of us, right? I don't want to insult anybody out there in the listening audience, but I am saying that many of us were not skeptical enough about that proposition, about that explanation of the new trade realities. I was very, very skeptical of it because I traveled around the world on a regular basis and visited many, if not most, of the countries. And I saw with my own eyes what was going on. And it was not something that that could be explained through any kind of thing that we call free trade. It wasn't. It wasn't free trade. It was a setup, right? It was an effort to extract wealth from America and to give it to others. I'm not saying that other countries shouldn't seek out benefits for their people. I'm not saying that at all, you know. But it's got to be some kind of a mutually beneficial arrangement. That is what trade means. Okay. If we don't have a mutually beneficial arrangement, we actually don't have trade. We have some kind of coercion, some kind of a situation in which authoritarian practices are superimposed upon trading partners so that they are not free to engage in a mutually beneficial exchange of value. In order for trade to work, it has to be a mutually beneficial exchange of value. And until Trump took over as president, that actually was not the case. And we should have seen that long ago. We should have seen that back in the 80s, for example, and we didn't as a nation, and at least it wasn't visible if we did see it. And we should be very, very skeptical when somebody tells us something that just simply doesn't ring true. And I guess that's a test. If we want to consider ourselves to be critical thinkers, if we want to consider ourselves to be proficient critical thinkers, then the first order of business, I guess, would be whatever is going on and whatever we hear, does it have a ring of truth? All right, that's the first order of business. Now, I'm not saying that it is true or false. I'm not saying that at all. All right, but the first thing ought to be does this, whatever this message is, or whatever this statement is, or this proposition or proposal or whatever, all right, whatever it is, does it have a ring of truth to it, first and foremost? If it doesn't, then it demands further investigation, and it behooves us to go and investigate. It does. It behooves us to go and investigate and to see what we can discover about it. If it doesn't have the ring of truth, then there may be something wrong with it. And if there is something wrong with it, what is it? What is it that is wrong? And how is it that this proposition has been put forward when it contains things that just simply can't be supported and justified? You cannot justify this proposition in any way. And so that becomes, you know, a guiding principle for all of us who consider ourselves to be critical thinkers. Okay, so let me finish up at least my discussions this week about the State of the Union Address. And goes on to say that that as president, we will protect American workers and American intellectual property rights through strong enforcement of our trade rules. He goes on to say that we will rebuild our industries. It is also time to rebuild our crumbling infrastructure. America, he says, is a nation of builders. We built the Empire State Building in just 1 year. Is it not a disgrace that it can now take 10 years just to get a permit approved for a single road? So we need to get back to being builders, right? Not regulators. We have become a nation of regulators, and fortunately under President Trump, we're moving away from that paradigm, but we need to get back to being builders. Americans are, in fact, builders. That's what we do. We build things. We make things. And, you know, I've often talked about that on this show, the great opportunities that are before us, which are to return to our ability to build and make. And how can we do that in an efficient, effective way? We talk a great deal about that on this show because this is a show designed to address ourselves to things that we can do and to look at things as opportunities often, to see things as opportunities. What opportunities are there out there for us to do something and not just complain, but what positive things can we do? And that is the key to our, in my view, it's the key to our happiness, it's the key to our success, it's the key to being truly human and truly Americans, and it is the key for us participating in exercising our abilities to make America great again. Okay, so before I go, I would like to acknowledge a few people. I'd like to thank my listening audience for being here, and I would like to thank Red State Talk Radio for providing us an opportunity for each and every weekend to put on this radio show that we call Throttle Up. And I would like to thank all of you veterans out there. Thank you for your service, and I would like to thank the families of the veterans. Thank you for supporting this noble cause. And I would like to thank all of you on active duty in the Guard and the Reserve. Thank you for serving this great country of ours. And with that, I would like to say goodbye, and we will see you all again next week.